You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
I'm not going to fall back on doing anything except the work that I want to do now. Luckily for me, that means that work is in a lot of different areas, but it is you have to believe the universe is working with you.
Welcome to the Black Business of Broadway, a podcast brought to you by the Broadway League and Black to Broadway. Here, we highlight the stories, how-tos, and successes of the Black professionals and legends of Broadway. I'm your host, Janine Scott. Today's guest is Broadway veteran and advocate T. Oliver Reed. T. Oliver has spent the past 20 years working on Broadway shows such as Hadestown, Once on This Island, Sister Act, Mary Poppins, Thoroughly Modern Millie, and Kiss Me Kate, to just name a few. He's produced and directed concerts for 54 Below and continues to work in film and television. T. is also a faculty instructor at NYU and Columbia University, along with other schools and institutions. He sits on the board of visitors for the University of North Carolina School of the Arts and is the co-founder of the Black Theater Coalition. T. Oliver, what can't you do? I'm serious. You dance, you sing, you direct, you produce, you advocate.
Listen,
what else?
I come from a background, and I give all honor to my grandmother, who's no longer with us, but also all blame to her. And when I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and it was one day we were sitting in her car, and I remember her saying, "You have to pay attention to everything." And from that point on, I really did. Like, I got in trouble some days, because in college there's one, I remember I got to go sing at the Governor's Mansion in North Carolina with a couple other singers from the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. And I remember walking into one of these main rooms, and the person who was, I guess, probably their PR person, I remember looking at her and going, "There's Lynn over there, and you got three candles out over there, and that light bulb's out over there." And because not thinking anything of it, except, "I know y'all want to make sure this room looks perfect for whatever is about to happen. These things aren't ready." But I come by that naturally with the, "I need to do this, and I need to be able to pay attention to what's going on in all these other areas." So, you know, as early as my first Broadway show, it wasn't just about being on the stage. It was paying attention to what the director was doing, what the choreographer was doing, what they were saying to the lighting designer. So I had a little bit of knowledge in a lot of different areas. But you can blame Mildred Jackson Sadler for that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Miss Sadler.
Yes.
Grandma Sadler.
That's it. That's the one. That's it.
So you are originally from North Carolina, as you mentioned, and you've been performing since you could walk and talk.
Pretty much.
That's what it says in your bio. Yeah. So it's safe to assume that you had your family's support. So how did you get to where you're at now? Because we know many Black folks, the arts just aren't seen as a viable career.
Yeah.
The means of support, you know, and we get it because of the history. And each generation wanted us to do better than the next generation. And so they just don't see this. How did you get here? And what was that support system like, especially in an industry where we're traditionally shut out?
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I could tell you that there was a straight trajectory for me. But I looked around in those early years and I saw that things were happening for a lot of other people. And I had to keep reminding myself that that's not your journey. So that when I saw someone when they were first getting their Broadway show or whatever these things were, they were getting their first, you know, principal on Broadway. It's like, that's not your journey. And you have to remember that. It's like, I had the support of family early on. I mean, my entire family is extremely musical. I come from a family of educators. And for some reason, the idea of going into music, going into being a singer sort of full time and using and having that as a profession and as a career didn't seem odd to anyone. And there was never an obstacle other than for myself. I was the person putting mm-hmm. the obstacles in the way. I remember in high school thinking I loved architecture. I still do. And I was like, I want to go into architecture. But I also knew it was like singing would always be a part of my life. It's not one of those things that, oh, I don't want to do it professionally, so I'm never going to sing again. It's like, if that's the road I'm going down, then great. But if that's not the road or if that's not my journey, then I'll still sing in church. I'll still sing here. I'll still do any of these things. So it would always be a part of my life no matter what. But there were a couple of lucky things that just happened over and over. One was my senior year in college. The director of our opera that year, Victoria Bussard, who runs the Baldwin-Wallace University Theater Program, she came in. She was also directing this second national tour of Once in This Island was going out, and she asked me if I would audition for it. So 3 days after graduating from college, I was working professionally on this second national tour, bus and truck,
wow,
let me tell you, of Once in This Island. And for, you know, a couple of years of doing some tours and things before I moved to New York and started auditioning, and the universe kept bringing people into me who were luckily for me and happily, they were happily giving me advice and telling me exactly what I needed to do. And like some of those are one of my dear friends still, Paula Leggett Chase, who I met early on right after I joined Equity, and said to me, you need to take this job, not that job. This job is going to help wow. you meet these people. So that's the direction you need to go. And those moments continue to happen. But I think it was the vocal and non-vocal support of my family that allowed me to say, I can do this and I can move to New York and there's going to be an opportunity for me. Now, don't get me wrong. There were days early on that it was, are you going to get that 99-cent chicken nugget at Wendy's? Or are you going to take the train today, because those early days were bleak. But it was soon after that I realized, you know, it's like there's so much work in this country and in this city that the thing I was like, I'm not going to fall back on doing anything except the work that I want to do now. Luckily for me, that means that work is in a lot of different areas, but it is you have to believe the universe is working with you. And I stand by what Andre DeShield says all the time, is the universe is conspiring with you. And you have to repeat that yes. to yourself and remind yourself of that, because otherwise all these other things will get in the way until you know why it can't happen and why it shouldn't happen. But if you just listen to the universe, and for me, I still call that God. So for me, it's like it is, but however you look at what that higher power is, there is something that is always leading you in the direction that you need to go. And sometimes it's getting rid of all that other noise to say, oh yeah, this is what I said I wanted to do. I said it a year and a half ago. And the universe has been waiting for me to actually get back to that place so that we can step forward together.
Oh my God. Okay. This is totally off script, but I just did an interview earlier today, and this is like the theme for today. And I feel really? Like there's a message out there for me somewhere that I must need to hear, because it keeps recurring.
It is that thing. Sometimes it is God or the universe tapping you on that shoulder, saying, "Excuse me, ma'am." And sometimes that tap becomes a little shove of the back. And then sometimes it is, as my grandmother would tell you, it yes. is a smack on the back of the head, because you weren't listening and the universe is trying to get you to where you want to go.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. So, all right. We're not going to have a praise break.
Let me get my tambourine. Where's my tambourine?
Oh, mine's in another room. Well, you mentioned Andre DeShields, who is an, oh my gosh, an icon. And yes. every time I see him, I am just mm-hmm. in awe. Mm-hmm. But you recently made headlines by going on as a Fate, yes. which you lovingly call Auntie Fate.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about the importance of this moment? Because soon after, Tomas mm-hmm. went on as the first non-binary Fate.
Yes. Janine, it's so interesting, because in the midst of it, it seemed to me it's like, it is the job that I had to do. So that's what I do. That's what I do day in, day out. It's like I go and exactly. do my job. But it was the... and I'll circle back a little bit. Like when we were in rehearsals initially, because I was dance captain of the show, it was always this funny thing because the dance captain knows every track. Oh, at some point you may have to go on for a fate. And at that point, we called my fate Side Pony. Side Pony may have to go on. And we made fun of that always. It was never a big deal. But so I know all the choreography. I know most of the, almost everyone's music from the show just because it's in my head. And that Tuesday before, this all happened on Wednesday. The Tuesday before, we knew there were going to be, we're going to be down to only four workers on. So we were going through, we knew exactly what the show was going to be, what we were cutting, what we were changing, et cetera, et cetera. That Wednesday morning, I got up. I was like, I'm going to go to the gym and just clear my head. Got to the gym, got a call from stage manager. Okay, we're down to three workers. So everything that we had done and was in my head is like, all that has to change. So we got to the theater, went through the entire show of all of those changes, all the things we're going to have to do. And then one of the people who was on for a fate that afternoon, they escorted them out of the building, meaning that they had just tested positive. So as they were going out of the building, we all looked around and I remember looking at stage management and saying, why don't we, because they were canceling the matinee. I was like, so why don't we use this time to go over some fate music? So we did that. Our wardrobe designer ran down to Macy's to find some chiffon gowns that maybe they could put me in. And then our makeup designer said, we should go get some makeup now. I was like, oh yeah, we should. And we walked over to Alcone, got makeup, came back. I was like, do I have to shave? And they're like, no. So beat my face, got the costume on, got the makeup on, ready to walk on stage. And it wasn't until I stepped on stage and I looked out and I saw a few young people and their mouths were like, jaws like hanging to their laps. And I realized this is the first time that some of them realize that there is a place for them on Broadway, because they are seeing themselves in a way that they had not before. So it wasn't until then that it really hit me. And then having Tomas be able to go on and share their story as a non-binary human being, mm-hmm. and live in that space as well. It's like that we are still in the business of showing people that things are possible, that what we thought yes. was reality doesn't have to be reality. Reality can be whatever we want it to be. And these young people who are non-binary or don't identify as anything, but realize that there is a possibility for them if they can do it, if they have the talent, if they can sing it, if they can dance, whatever all these things are, it's like there's possibility for people that just didn't realize it or think or hope that they could ever be on a Broadway show. I think of, I forget everybody's names now. Allie, who was Oklahoma, who is wheelchair bound, and mm-hmm. winning Allie Soaker and winning a Tony Award, being in a Broadway show, a musical in a wheelchair, is like she was able to show so many people that is possible, which means that they have a possibility as well. So I think that what I was able to do and Tomas was able to do really, really amplified that, and showing a new group of performers, of actors, of singers, of musicians, that there is a possibility for them.
Speaking of possibilities, mm-hmm. pre-pandemic, post-pandemic.
Yes.
You know, can you talk about the changes that you see Broadway undergoing, especially as the co-founder of the Black Theater Coalition?
Yeah, it's, I have to show you, like, again, it's like when Warren Adams, my co-founder, and I started having conversations, and then when we looped Reggie Van Lee, and it was about seeing about the change that we knew was possible. I don't think we ever realized that there was as much work that needed to be done and needed to be done ASAP. And this is not we can do just a little bit and then we'll move on. It's like, as we started, there were so many things you're like, oh, you need to do this and you need to do this. It feels like there are a lot of people who were ready to do the work that just needed a push or needed support. And yes. I think that, that in the midst of the pandemic and George Floyd's murder and everything else, it was a moment for so many who are in positions of power working in the American theater. So not only on Broadway, but all these regional theaters, yeah. Et cetera, they needed a push, or they needed to know that there was support. So we look at, you know, Broadway Advocacy Coalition, Black Theater United, Black Theater Coalition, all these organizations who were who were able to bolster and say, we want you to do the work, and we are here to support you and lead you and be on this journey with you. It allowed a lot of people to really step forward. I mean, and the hard part for us was people wanted to step forward where people had been out of work for, you know, over a year, and these offices had no money coming in. So it's like, how do we not only support them, I would say spiritually, but also, you know, physically, but also, you know, help them find funding so that we could make sure that there were fellows and apprentices that were working on these shows and were being placed in positions to build relationships. Because you know, this business is built on relationships and built on good relationships.
All day.
So we want to make sure as many people as possible were getting those opportunities. And, you know, over this past year, 40 plus apprentices and fellows working on shows and working in offices, the change has begun. It is, there's much more to do and much more to do so that our Asian brothers and sisters and Latin brothers and sisters are also a part of this journey. It's heartening. It's so impressive for me to see the amount of change that's happened. Again, there's still a lot of room for improvement, and I think we all know that. And whether people are able to take, you know, these leaps and bounds and making change, or they're taking baby steps, or they're in a holding position trying to figure out where they're going to go or what they're going to do. For me, the goal is to be there and be ready for them.
Exactly. Yeah. Can you talk about the difference between the apprenticeship fellowship and an internship? Because I think a lot of people get confused.
Yeah.
And you're not placing interns, placing fellows,
yes.
People who are, I'm gonna let you talk.
Yeah, no, and part, no, it's okay. And part of that, Janice, is because we have stricken the word intern from our vocabulary, mostly because the internships that we have known have normally gone to fairly affluent white girls whose parents can afford for them to work for a summer or a year away from home and pay their rent, and it'll still have them be able to go out to bars and have drinks and have a great time and do all these things. So many people don't have that type of financial support or any type of support to be able to do something like that. So we really are focusing on the idea and the ideal of having fellowships and apprenticeships in as many places as possible. The fellowships for us are a longer term. Our initial goal was for them to be 12 months so that people could really immerse themselves in whichever area of the business they wanted to be in. So whether that's being a company manager or set design or lighting design, costume design, musical director, et cetera. So that you have 12 months of financial support so that you're not working two or three additional jobs, but you can really eat, sleep, breathe, and live musical theater. This business, again, like we just said about relationships, is built on being able to, you know, at 6 o'clock when you're walking down the street and people going to their theater, to know who those people are, maybe be able to introduce yourselves. Also to be able to go to those shows at night and see what's going on in front of house, backstage, et cetera. But if you are only doing this 9 to 5 and then you have to go to a secondary or a tertiary job because that's how you are able to survive, then you're missing out on the making of theater. So for us, so most of them are 12 months except for the general management fellowships, which are 24 months because with our general management partners, the 7 general management offices that we work with, it was about making sure that over those 2 years, those fellows actually leave and they have the goods to actually go to work. And that's the other thing for us. We said to many of our partners, like, we don't want this to be they're getting coffee and sitting in a corner. Now, if everybody in your office gets coffee at some point, absolutely fine. But this is not about someone being in what would normally be that intern and sitting and getting coffee and hopefully getting information because they've been listening. Let's get them working. Let's get them in, and you're giving them information and making sure that at the end of these fellowships, they know exactly what's going on. The apprenticeships are all a short amount of time, depending on our initial goals were as shows were reopening or new shows were coming in and they had their full teams already to make sure that there were people of color who were part of those teams. And so whether it's being a part of a show from the end of rehearsals through opening night, some lasting longer, the first of those was Company. Now we've done it with upwards of 12 to 15 shows. We have people who are who will be on Bad Cinderella, people who are on on K-pop, Leopold Stott, and so on and so on. But those are just a shorter amount of time, but still being able to work with the company managers, general managers, being able to work with the creative teams in their process of getting these shows open.
And you're changing lives because these individuals, many of whom I've had an opportunity to meet, are getting jobs.
They are getting jobs. We had our staff meeting this morning and literally was talking about there are many fellows who are doing this, but one in particular who is just like job after job after job. And it's because, and she says, she texts me all the time. It's like, I cannot thank you enough for this. Like, and I said to her, it's like, ma'am, you did the work. We got you in that first door, but you showed up and showed out. You showed them that you had all of the goods to do exactly what you were doing. They just would have never, they would have never seen her, known her name, because she was not already in their circle or in their sphere. And that again for us is again was the initial goal. It's like to open those doors to make sure there are room at tables for people who had not historically been at those tables. And there are several who are you know, get gold stars for the work that they have done and how they have taken this opportunity and really blossomed into who we knew they could be.
Exactly. This is about generational wealth.
Absolutely.
Of a community.
Yeah.
And I love your program. I love this program. I love the initiative. I love the coalition. I've made no secret about that.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Seriously, I mean, I think about the generational wealth that you're creating within a community. I think about how you are showing not just other folks that we belong in those spaces. We just needed an opportunity, but you're showing us that we belong in those spaces, and all we needed was an opportunity.
Well, and one, you know, again, it's like, and I know you know this, it is that thing of being able to see someone in a position and say, oh, this person looks like me, maybe I can do that too. And when we walk into these theaters, these which have been historically white spaces, and we don't see anyone who looks like us when we enter the door, we don't think that it's a place that is safe or welcoming of us, even though we have given the money for our ticket. If we don't see people around those theaters or people coming to us and saying, if you don't sing, act, or dance, great. But do you have interest in music? Because there are plenty of other places that you can find careers in music. If do you have interest in other places of you do this and that, or did you think because you're going to law school that there is not entertainment law, so you can't actually combine those two things? There are all these. It's just about offering opportunities, offering choices up to these young people, whether they're between 9 and 12, whether they're graduating from high school, whether they're in the middle of college programs and trying to figure out how to combine a love for something that they had with what they think they need to do. Because that's what our families have told us is the way to make money. And what we're finding more and more in this younger generation is like, it's about being able to survive and be comfortable, but it's also about finding that thing that you're going to love to do for the rest of your life or for the next 5 years or 10 years and not be in the rat race that our parents and grandparents thought was what needed to be the norm.
Exactly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So how do you balance working within existing structures and calling out practices that need to be changed?
It's my thing is, and it's something that I always do my best to live by. And I do my best also not to use the word try, because anytime somebody tells me they're going to try to do something, that just means they're not going to do it. They just don't want to tell you yet. So I do my best to lead with kindness. And again, it's the things like, if I would not appreciate someone speaking to me in a certain way, then I'm not going to speak to someone else in that way. And I'm going to ask people who are around me to do the same thing. It's like, how do you lead with kindness? How do you call someone? How do you call someone out or call someone in and say, I'm noticing that these are habitual things for you, or I'm noticing that this is what is going on. How can we fix this? How do we fix this? And this is not, again, not a pointed a finger at someone, but how do I have a conversation with someone and say, This is something that we need to address. This is something that we need to see if we can fix this together. How can I help you with that? Or how can I support you, whatever that thing is? But if it's just throwing smoke bombs, if it's pointing fingers, then everybody puts their guards up. And no matter how much you want to work or how much that person needs support or how much they want to do the right thing. When you start pointing fingers and calling people out, guess what? Everybody does this. They cross those arms and no work gets done. So for me, it's like, how do I lead with kindness and how do I continue to do that so that we can make the change that we want to make? Because at the end of the day, it ain't about me. I am a conduit for what needs to happen, for what God, the universe put into my brain, into my mind. And then the universe brought the right people around so that we could do some work. But it's at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about making sure that this next generation gets the opportunities that they are capable of handling and that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my final question, speaking of the next generation, speaks to the next generation. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, I would like for you to give the website, to give some information for if anybody wants to either apply or wants to help to support the coalition.
Yes.
Could you give that information?
Absolutely. If you would like to just get some information on Black Theater Coalition, you can go to blacktheatercoalition.org, and that's TheatreCoalition. That good old English spelling. Yes, blacktheatercoalition.org. That has all the information. That has information on our fellowships and our apprenticeships. Also, if people just want to donate a little money, you can also donate there. And for those who want to be a part, whether it's a fellowship or apprenticeship, there's information on those as well on the website. So you can leave your information in the database. You can also go ahead and apply, leaving your resume, et cetera. Because these are open-ended, so the apprenticeships are happening as the Broadway season does. So there are many that happen this fall. There are many more that will happen in the spring. You can go to Instagram, Black Theater Coalition, as well as, even though I don't want to say it, Twitter, because who knows how long Twitter's going to be around, because, you know, she's having a minute. But
she's
having a long minute. She's going through some stuff. But we go stay there with her for a minute longer until she goes off the deep end. But yeah, so you can follow us at on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter at Black Theater Coalition, and honestly, you know, whether it's financial or just that good spiritual support, we appreciate it, because this is a journey that we are all on together, and for us, it's we started, you know, in the Broadway box, but it's also about how do we change regional theater, how do we change college programs so that young Black people who are going into the programs see themselves, and young Black people who are thinking about going into these programs are supported, and how then also do we, with a lot that the Broadway League is doing as well, it's like when we're looking at these kids 9 to 12, et cetera, it's like, how do we, once they have that spark of interest in the theater, how do we hold their hands and make sure that they keep it? And how do we show them all of the directions that they can go in the American theater, you know, and that's whether they want to come to New York or they want to stay in their hometowns, because we both know a lot of people love being where they are. I talk to friends all the time, a friend who's in tech, and he's working for a company, and they were always trying to get they were trying to get interns to come, and they were going to, you know, historically black colleges and universities to get them, and many of them was like trying to get them to go to San Francisco for the summer. It's like some of these kids had never been on a plane. Some of these people had never been out of some of these states.
Exactly.
So the idea of them going that far away from family, they have to have that support system to understand. It's like, we got you. We're taking you here for this amount of time, but we're going to support you. We're not leaving you at the bus station. We're not leaving you in the airport. We're going to support you. So for us, it is that thing. It's like, if there are people who aren't ready to come to New York, how do we support them where they are? And for those who are ready to come to New York, truly, how do we support them as they begin to find their way in this business and to find their careers?
And I love, and that's one of the things that I really love about what you all have established, is that it is a network, and you teach and you help to facilitate that network within the industry, but it's also a network within each other, and that they support and edify one another. Mm-hmm. And it goes against the trope, the racial trope, that we're crabs in a barrel, because
absolutely
it is not that way at all. It is all about the edification of one another and helping the other person to succeed and to be the best them that they can.
And Jeanine, I gotta tell you, it's like, and it may be, and there may have been a time that it was more crabs in that teeny tiny barrel, but I gotta tell you, there was a group of us when I was doing lots of auditioning in those early years, that it was like you someone casting would bring in, you know, 12, 15 black men, and we'd all look around. We're like, somebody's getting a job today, because this isn't us, but the great thing was that one was getting a job, because it wasn't us coming into a room with a bunch of other people. And we know, oh, y'all just brought us in to see us. You were hiring those six blonde boys, those six dark haired boys, and that one redhead. You were hiring them. These were the days. It was like they were just bringing in men of color. We're like, great. A man of color is getting a job today, and we are all okay with that, because we are all going to turn it out. So whoever turned it out the most today is getting that job. But we were happy for whoever that was. We want BTC wants the whole of the American theater industry to understand, like, we're happy for everyone who's getting that opportunity. We know that there are more opportunities out there. We know that there are more chances. So we want to make sure that we are opening as many doors as we can. We are sticking our feet in those doors. We are holding them open for whoever needs and is ready to walk through them.
Yes, absolutely. So now for the final question. What is one piece of advice you'd like to share with the Black future leaders of Broadway?
Stop waiting for someone else to do what is already in your heart. And that is the thing. That has been the thing for me. It's like I've for many years, like whether it's coming up with ideas or something else, it's like, why are you waiting for someone else to do what God, the universe, has already put on you? That just means it's time for you to step forward with that idea. And because you step forward, guess what's going to happen? People will come to you because you have taken that first step. So I think it is. So it's twofold. When you have the idea, where you have something that you know needs to be done, go ahead and do it, and trust that the universe will be there with you as well.
Absolutely. Let your gift make way. I'm with you.
Yes. Yes.
Love it. I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
It has been a pleasure. It's so good. It's I don't get to see your beautiful smiling face enough. We have to change that in the new year.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
I will see you next week, though. I will see you at your event. I am looking forward to that.
Likewise.
And I hope you're feeling well.
Thank you.
I want to thank our guests and you, our listeners. You could have been doing anything else, but you chose to spend your time with me, and I am grateful. Be sure to subscribe at bpn.fm/BBB so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, tell a friend. I'm your host, Jeanine Scott, and we at the Broadway League hope you enjoyed this episode of The Black Business of Broadway.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.